Welcome to the Food Revolution Summit, where we explore how you can heal your body and your world with food. This is Ocean Robbins, and I am joined by my dad and colleague, John Robbins, in welcoming our guest, Vani Hari. Vani Hari, also known as the Food Babe, has in just the last 3 years become one of the most powerful voices in the food movement. She reaches more than 4 million readers through her blog articles, and she's led a series of successful campaigns that have changed the face of the corporate food industry. Food Babe campaigns have helped persuade Chick-fil-A to commit to stop serving chicken raised with antibiotics, Subway to stop using an industrial chemical in their breads, and Kraft to remove harmful petroleum-based artificial food dyes from their products aimed at children. Other major food companies that have responded to her advocacy include Whole Foods, Lean Cuisine, McDonald's, General Mills, Coca-Cola, Chipotle, and Moe's Southwest Grill. Vani has been profiled on most of the major media outlets of our times, and her work is helping food companies to become more accountable to consumer demand and to the well-being of our planet. So now, Vani, my dad and I are so inspired by the huge difference that you're making and so grateful to you for taking this time to share your message with our listeners. And now for the interview, I'm going to hand it over to my dad, John Robbins.
Thank you, Ocean. And I join Ocean, Vani, in welcoming you, as do all of our listeners, and thanking you for your work. And you are incredibly passionate, obviously, about understanding the food we eat, how it's grown, what chemicals are used in its production, and what the effect those have on the human body. I'm also quite passionate about those things. And when I have the great pleasure, as I do now, of meeting someone who shares this passion, I always wonder, what has brought you to such a deep commitment?
Well, thank you for asking that question. Thank you so much for having me here today. I'm super excited to share my story and my work with your followers and readers and everybody who wants to change the food system and change their body and eat healthy. You know, I didn't set out to become this food advocate that I am today. It was really by accident. About 10 years ago, I was living the typical American lifestyle, trying to keep up with the rat race, having a very high-profile, demanding job at a big six consulting firm right out of college, and was doing what everybody else was doing around me, eating the food that was catered in or that we were allowed to buy on our expense account or the food that was the fastest to get so that you could go back to work. And I was traveling Sunday through Thursday, working a lot of hours while I was on the client site, but then coming back to Charlotte, having little time to prepare and grocery shop and take care of myself and to work out and to do all the things that are necessary to have a healthy body. And, you know, I wasn't really taught how to do this. And I didn't really read about it a lot in college because, you know, when you're a kid and you're in your early 20s, you really don't think about this kind of stuff. And I slowly let my body start deteriorating. And it started to get so bad that I gained a quick 30 pounds on my small frame and just this few short months of starting this job, and I started to feel really bad. I didn't have as much energy. I didn't feel that great. I remember it not being a very exciting time in my life because I was working all the time and eating all this food that really fueled my coffee addiction. You know, I took up coffee, drank a lot of coffee all the time just to stay on and to have my adrenaline system working so that I could work these crazy long hours, and eventually it caught up with me very quickly. And one day I had a pain in my side, went to the emergency room, and the doctor sent me home. He said, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. You're totally fine. Take some Advil. You'll be fine. And if it wasn't for my parents' sixth sense and saying, you know, we think you should see another doctor and see what's really going on, I might not be here today because the next morning I had an emergency appendectomy. My appendix was completely inflamed and had to be taken out immediately. So I had my stomach cut open and my organ taken out, and it was December of 2002 at the time. You know, I was in my early 20s. There were all these parties that young kids would go to meet a date or, you know, to go out and have fun, and I couldn't go. I remember it was the night I had the surgery, there was a big party, and I couldn't go, and I was, like, thinking, oh, my gosh, what's happening with my life? And then a week went by, and I'm still recovering, and everyone's out shopping for the holidays and getting presents for each other, and I remember just gosh, wanting to do that one thing, just be able to go to the mall and go shopping, and I couldn't because I was in a hospital bed. And I decided that this is not how I want to live my life. This is not how I want to feel, and I have to make some changes, and I have to figure this out. And the doctors kept telling me that, you know, appendicitis is a very random thing. But when I looked deep into it, when I channeled all of this energy and skills that I had developed in high school to learn and to research, I was a top-ranked debater in high school where I'd spend every summer at debate camp researching the year's topic, and one year was healthcare, and I remember learning a lot about that in high school. And so suddenly this light bulb clicked in my head that I need to research my health. I need to research my body. I need to research, first of all, what happened to me here? Why did my appendix have to be taken out? And why did I feel so bad about it? And what I found out is that your appendix is part of your digestive system. And if your digestive system is inflamed from eating inflammatory foods, it could inflame your appendix. And that's how this happens. It's not some random thing that occurs. That this really could have been prevented. And not to mention the weight gain and all of the other ailments that I was facing. My whole life I had eczema, asthma, allergies. I was on several prescription drugs to control those chronic ailments that I thought I would have for the rest of my life. But it wasn't until this light bulb moment and the short months after that that I started to figure out what I was eating and completely rehauled my diet, started eating organic, started eating less processed foods, and stopped, frankly, outsourcing my food to the corporation that I was working for and to the corporations that were feeding us fast food, the Subways, the Chick-fil-A's, the Wendy's, the McDonald's, et cetera, that I started to feel better and eventually eliminated all of these chronic ailments I've had for all of my life, not to mention lose the 30 pounds, and now I've been able to maintain a weight and feel the best I've ever felt in the last 10 years now and for the last several years. It has been an amazing transformation. This is all happening while I was trying to live this corporate lifestyle, trying to figure out, well, how can I work this really demanding job and take care of myself, and where do I draw the line, and where do I say to my boss, hey, I'm going to go work out at lunch today, and that's just the way it's going to be.
Young adults are not, as a rule, overly concerned about living healthy lifestyles. Maybe they're on their own for the first time, and they want to experience things for themselves. Maybe they're ambitious, and they want to succeed, and they throw themselves into their work and their careers. Or maybe they throw themselves into partying and their social lives. But usually they aren't the most health-conscious people, and often they forget the importance of self-care, and their lives can get a little out of control.
That's what I did, and I slowly started to take back that control. And when I did, I developed these methodologies on how to travel and live organically and how to figure out what to eat when you go out to a restaurant that, you know, would do the least damage, and how to encourage people around me to choose better restaurants and better places to eat. And everyone around me started to see this dramatic transformation, not only in my health and the way I looked, but in just my energy. It was like I was a new person. And my friends, my family, my coworkers wanted to know my secrets. They wanted to know what this green drink I was bringing to work was. My aunts and my cousins wanted to know what I'm doing to maintain my weight without dieting. And they wanted to know the recipes. They wanted to know the tips. They wanted to know the secrets. And so one day I decided to give up television for Lent. I'm not Catholic, but I gave up television for Lent. And because I was still working this really demanding corporate job at the time, and it gave me enough time to really focus on starting this blog. At the time, I wanted to call the blog eathealthylivforever.com or something like that. And I yelled over to my husband, who's the technical person in the family, and I said, hey, can you register this domain for my blog? And he goes, what is it again? And I yelled it out again, and he's like, okay, listen, no one's going to remember that name. We need to come up with a better name for your blog. And so he did some research, and he found the name FoodBabe was available, foodbabe.com, and yelled it out from the other room, and I say, oh, well, you know, I thought for a second, and I wasn't really sure, you know, I was kind of like, can I call myself the food babe, or is it how to be a food babe? You know, I was just really confused about calling myself a babe, being self-proclaimed that, but what ended up happening is I started it to teach everybody how to be a food babe, but I actually became the food babe because I started signing my posts food babe at the end of each post because I was still working in corporate America. I didn't even have my picture on the blog for a very long time because I wanted to remain somewhat anonymous. You know, I was telling people what was really happening in the food industry, and I wanted to share a lot of my life. I wasn't even on Facebook or Twitter or any of these social media platforms before this because, honestly, being a corporate citizen, you just didn't do that. You didn't want your boss to find all of your personal information or your personal friends and relationships and pictures and things. And so I had to learn all of that from scratch, how to use Facebook, how to use Twitter to get the message out there.
So at that point, you weren't on Facebook, you weren't on Twitter or using any other social media. And now, just a few years later, you've become a master at using social media as a megaphone to pressure the food industry. You have now nearly 500,000 followers on Facebook, and foodbabe.com is the go-to site for a veritable army of food activists. What happened? What changed?
Really an intervention of friends that said, you know, Bonnie, you need to be on these social media. First of all, you need to see your wedding pictures from the last year, but we also need you on here so you can spread the message about your blog. And so I joined right along the same time as I started the blog, and I started writing. And what I found out very quickly is that there wasn't just me who thought that these things, but there was a huge army of people that started to figure out what was in their food and starting to really care about what they're eating. And not only care about what they're eating, but caring about what everybody else is eating too, and the whole world's being fed. And I started finding other blogs that thought a lot like me, and I started following them. And slowly but surely started to grow foodbabe.com to the point where I was really changing the world by carrying all of these different voices, by just writing about certain things. I remember one of the big wins early on, before anybody really knew who I was when I called out Chipotle for not releasing their ingredients online. They had spent a lot of time and energy to tell people that they had food with integrity, but they wouldn't tell us what was actually in it. And so I wrote about that, and I was really horrified to find out that not only when I called the corporate headquarters, but when I actually went into the store or, you know, emailed the customer service line, nobody would tell me what was in their tortillas. And I was like, well, this is your burrito shell that you say is food with integrity. How am I supposed to know that I'm eating something safe and good if you won't even tell me what's in it? And it wasn't until I got an employee to actually go behind his manager's back and show me the different packages and the labels at a store nearby here that I started to figure out what was really happening. And so I released that on my blog, and people were really upset. Not only was I upset at the whole situation, but people were so upset that they started a petition on my behalf. They were calling the Chipotle headquarters. They were going to the Chipotle Facebook page, to the point where the communications director tweeted directly to me, wanted to meet with me right away to discuss what I had experienced. And not only did they start to work to get the ingredients online, they actually did it in about 6 months from that post. And on my birthday, they sent me an email with the link to the ingredients and said, ta-da, here's what's in our food. And guess what? We're also going to be starting to take out some of the genetically engineered ingredients that you talked about in your post.
Now, it's a huge win for all of us. And when you talk about the lack of transparency that Chipotle was evidencing, I think about Trader Joe's. I mean, a lot of people enjoy shopping at Trader Joe's. It's fun. The employees are friendly. But when you look into it, there are a few things that aren't so great about Trader Joe's. I mean, the company presents itself as green and hip, but the food they sell, it's the opposite of local. It often comes from far-flung places all over the world. They don't have bulk foods, and in fact, many of the stores have more packaging per item than most conventional supermarkets.
Mm-hmm.
Some of Trader Joe's store brands are actually made by big companies like PepsiCo and Frito-Lay. They still sell meat from animals routinely fed antibiotics. The company's owned by a family of German billionaires. And perhaps most importantly to me anyway, the company does cloak its business practices in secrecy. You're a food investigator. Do you find Trader Joe's lack of transparency to be frustrating?
Very frustrating. I did a thorough investigation on them recently, and the post is entitled, "What is Trader Joe's hiding?" And in the second sentence of the first paragraph is, it's a lot. It's a lot, but they're hiding a lot from us. And I think for somebody who really cares about where they put their money, because honestly, where we put our money, what we buy every single day is shaping the marketplace. And if we're secretly buying the big companies like PepsiCo and Coca-Cola and General Mills and Kellogg that we're banning elsewhere because we see their labels and we say, you know what, I'm not going to support that company because that company is giving millions of dollars to prevent us from knowing what's in our food and prevent GMO labeling in all these states like California and Washington, and I'm going to avoid those companies. But then they go to Trader Joe's thinking, oh, it's Trader Joe's brand. I can buy this. It's organic. Or even they get the illusion that it's non-GMO because it's a Trader Joe's brand. However, Trader Joe's doesn't have a third-party verification for any of their products that are non-organic. It's a real trust factor here, and there's a big lack of transparency here when it comes to shopping at Trader Joe's. And one thing that I personally think about before I go there, and you know, I don't go there a lot, but I do shop there on occasion, and one of the things that really gets to me is their label that everything is non-GMO, but there's no verification. Several people within the non-GMO project, anti-GMO community, people who want labels have requested that they get some verification for their products, and they refuse to. They actually won't even talk to reporters. The fact that I even got a lady on the phone to talk to me a little bit was really a miracle. They're a very private company. They won't allow you in. And I can tell you the post that I wrote angered a lot of people because they felt duped by Trader Joe's. They thought that they were buying a better product by going there and a safer product. In a lot of the cases, especially with meat like you mentioned, John, they're still selling meat treated with antibiotics. I mean, a major fast food chain like Chick-fil-A is taking the step to eliminate this practice. But Trader Joe's, the people with all the really friendly green marketing isn't doing this. This is a big thing that people really need to rise up about and support. I know the Consumers Union and Consumers Report is petitioning them, and I think they're campaigning right now to get Trader Joe's to stop selling meat raised with antibiotics, and I hope that they prevail.
I do too. And speaking of GMOs, which you were a moment ago, I know that one of your most celebrated achievements really was your participation in the 2012 Democratic National Convention, where you sat in the front row and stood up with a sign during Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack's speech that said, "Label GMOs." You got a lot of massive, really, media attention for that. Why did you do that? Why was that important to you, and what was the result?
Well, you know, I ran to be a delegate in 2012 to hold the leaders of our nation accountable for their promises to us. In 2007, President Obama was on record saying that we should have labels on genetically engineered ingredients and that this would be part of his platform. Instead, actually actively, intentionally worked against the policy by nominating Secretary Tom Vilsack as the Secretary of Agriculture, someone who's in the back pockets of the Corn Refiners Association, who is in the back pocket of Monsanto and all these other big biotech companies. And that really angered me as an individual who cares about our food supply, who cares about the amount of pesticides being sprayed on these genetically modified crops that are getting into our water, getting into our food, getting into our bodies, that are increasing the rates of cancer and disease in this country. Nobody's really, you know, allowing us to have the freedom to choose non-GMO food and to be able to have the human right to say, you know what, I'm not going to eat this genetically engineered ingredient. I'm going to go for the non-GMO because we don't have labels in this country. And when I found out that at the time, over 50, now it's even more, 50 countries had required labeling of genetically engineered ingredients and the United States did not, I felt like this was a big slap in the face and something that I felt like is just a basic fundamental human right that we as Americans should have. And so I ran to be a delegate to hold our leaders accountable. So I spent the entire week at the convention talking about this issue with every single politician, senator, congressman, media, famous people, whoever I could get a hold of to talk about this issue, to spread the message of this needs to be on our platform. This is something that needs to be addressed. And I can tell you, not a single one person really had a good response for me. The people, like my own senator, Senator Kay Hagan, she told me we need to look at science when I asked her if GMOs should be labeled. I'm like, science? What does science have anything to do with a fundamental right of what we have the right to know of what we need to eat? It really angered me. And so at that moment, you know, it had been a few days into the convention, and we were lucky as a North Carolina delegation to have a really good spot on the floor. And I made sure to get the front row that day. And, you know, I took out the back of my program and wrote label GMOs on it. And I stood up very high and held my sign up very high. And I know Secretary Tom Vilsack saw me because I was right there. And that was the real point of the matter. And to represent all of the millions of people and the voices from all across the country that believe that this is a fundamental right and that we should have the right to know what's in our food. Literally, I felt like the only one there that really cared about this issue. But it was really to make an impact on the secretary, because I really wanted him to know that there's someone in the delegation on the floor that is paying attention and that is holding this administration accountable for their promises. Shortly after I did that, the cameras and all of the media kind of besieged me, and the focus went off of Secretary of Agriculture's speech and onto me. But when I went back and actually read his speech, I found out it was very baseless. It didn't really talk about what really needs to be done in this country to safeguard our farmland or the farmers or our health. And that really upset me. But shortly after I did that, it was really amazing. The delegation, some members from the delegation of Hawaii saw this. And they walked down and they introduced themselves and they said, thank you. You know, thank you for being our voice. Thank you for doing that, because we've been fighting this in Hawaii. And I felt like, oh, gosh, there's other people here. This is so fantastic. And not to mention my entire delegation who had elected me. I'd say, you know, probably 85% of my delegation had no idea what GMO meant or what I was doing. And when I had the opportunity to explain it to them, they were blown away. And they were like, oh, my gosh, you are amazing. Thank you so much for standing up for us. Shortly thereafter, a Washington Times article came out about the different members of the delegation. And when everyone had seen that article, they came up and really thanked me for that. And I think if anything came out of that situation was really the opportunity to educate the people around me, to tell them what's really happening with our food supply and the lack of transparency and how GMOs have been planted all over our land here in the United States, right under our noses, without us even knowing it, really, as a collective American public. It was just a really great event that happened, and it all happened out of passion, because I just wanted to make sure our voices were heard.
And you did speak for millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of us when you did that, and I thank you for that, and I know our listeners do, because our listeners are, many of them, activists in the food arena, part of the food revolution, wanting their food choices and the way they eat to be a form of activism, a way of changing the world, their bodies and the health of our planet, all connected and all at stake today. And as you've undertaken this enterprise, become Food Babe and become a voice for so many people, you've really had an impact. And after your posts about Chick-fil-A received a lot of attention, I know you were invited by the company to meet with their leaders at their headquarters, where you told them that your number one issue would be for them to stop serving chickens raised on antibiotics. And they said then that that would not be possible. But recently, Chick-fil-A has reversed course and has pledged to become antibiotic-free within 5 years. They told the press, Chick-fil-A told the press, that they made the change because, and I quote, "The issue surfaced as the number one issue for our customers." Now, that is exactly what you had told them. It was the number one issue for you. Mm-hmm. How did you feel when you learned they were, in effect, acquiescing to your demands on this and making a change that really is important?
You know, I received a email from their executives the day before they made the announcement, and they said, we just want you to know there's something major happening tomorrow, and you're going to be pleasantly surprised, or something along those lines, and you're going to want to know what's going on. And so when the announcement came the next day, I screamed louder than anybody could ever imagine. I swear, like, everyone must have heard me in my building that I live in and my poor husband's ears. And I started to cry. I really did, because I felt like this change is so monumental and such a shift from fast food's mentality about how they should be sourcing their food. And for Chick-fil-A to be such a major fast food player and to be growing at the rate that they are, they have a huge opportunity to really change the marketplace. And the way that they're going about this, too, has gotten a lot of criticism. A lot of people are saying, well, why is it going to take them 5 years? And, you know, I've thought a lot about that. For an individual that wants to see change yesterday, it's easy to say, well, why can't they do that sooner? What they're going to be doing is making the change from within. So all of their suppliers that they currently source their chickens from are going to start changing their practices. And these are not just any old suppliers. These are the big suppliers. These are the Tysons and the Purdue's and the Foster Farms and all of these major, huge chicken companies. If they start to change their practices within, that means they're going to have more supply to give other fast food chains, like the McDonald's and the Wendy's and the Burger King's and the Subway's and all of the rest, that are eventually going to have to start moving this direction because they're not going to be able to keep up.
I still would not eat it at the restaurants for many reasons, nor would I encourage people to do so, but I do recognize the importance of this change. Currently, 80% of the antibiotics used in the country are fed to livestock, not to people. They're used as growth promotants in factory farms, which enable the industry to keep animals under horribly, horribly cruel conditions without killing them, because the antibiotics keep them growing. And we know that this level of antibiotic use leads to resistance. The more antibiotics you use, the more resistance you're going to get. Already, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are telling us that 23,000 Americans die each year of illnesses caused by antibiotic-resistant bacteria, and another 2 million people are sickened. These numbers are growing. They're increasing. This makes resistant bacteria already a greater health threat than AIDS, and the problem is just increasing tremendously with every passing day. It's one of the reasons why Consumers Union has made this their issue. They're calling on all retailers and all grocery stores to sell only meat that was raised without antibiotics. And they're targeting, as you mentioned, Trader Joe's in particular, which presents itself as a healthier alternative but still sells meat raised with antibiotics.
And I think that's why tears shed down my face when I heard this announcement, because I just felt like it was such a big momentum shift. This is a company, a year and a half ago when I met with them, they said the chicken supplier was right there in the room, the head of all of that, right there in the room, at the boardroom, at the table, and they looked at me and they said, this would be nearly impossible. There's not enough supply. There's no way we can do it. I mean, gave me every excuse in the book. I remember looking at the whiteboard. It was my number one request. And to go this route and to make this fundamental commitment to do this, I think is going to have enough momentum to get these other fast food chains to start making these changes. And I'd like to see them do it faster. And you're right, I still won't eat there either, John. Still not going to eat there for various reasons of other ingredients they use, too. Not to mention that there's still the thought of, you know, are they going to really be raising these chickens humanely? Because right now, healthy chickens just born right out of the hatchery are fed antibiotics at birth before they even get sick to make them fat and to fatten up and then to keep them from dying before they're done in horrible conditions. So it's a really big issue, and I'm just glad that it's being somewhat addressed and there is a goal in mind. And I think other fast food chains, especially Subway, who has this mentality, not mentality, but marketing that says eat fresh, and you've got Olympic athletes endorsing their sandwiches and a guy who's lost hundreds of pounds, and now you have the first lady endorsing it for children, their chicken better well be without antibiotics, but it's not. So they better get a clue really quick. If they're going to survive in this marketplace where people are becoming more aware of what's happening with our food supply and our bodies and what a great impact and risk it has on the whole human population, I hope that they start to adapt to that and start listening to their consumers.
Well, they are more so than they used to because of you, really, and Subway in particular. I mean, you've led a successful campaign to get them to remove an ingredient from their baked products. The chemical in question is azodicarbonamide, and it's used industrially to make not just yoga mats, but shoe soles and floor mats and window gaskets. It's banned as a food additive in the UK and in Europe and in Australia, but it is used in the U.S., to provide strength and elasticity to bread dough. You've actually pointed out that if you get caught using it in Singapore, you can get up to 15 years in prison and be fined nearly $500,000. And you've gotten Subway to at least commit to phasing it out of their bread dough.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people think it was the petition that did that, but this was really a almost two-year-long campaign to try to get them to change. And it started with an investigation I did in 2012 where I went in and I wanted to know, is Subway real food? If you look at the ingredients, is it real food? And what I found out was horrifying. Most of the breads in there had close to 50 ingredients. And one of these ingredients, azodicarbonamide at the time, I couldn't even pronounce. I couldn't even spell it, you know? And I was like, well, what is this chemical? You know, my inquisitive nature kicked in. And so I started doing some research and I was like, wait a minute, I'm looking at the ingredient list of bread in the UK, at Subway, in Australia, in other countries, and I'm like, how come they have a completely different ingredient list? I mean, totally different than what they're serving here in the United States, and without this long chemical name. The things I found out were really horrifying because I found out the reason it's banned is because there's a study that shows when it's heated, it reduces into two compounds that are carcinogenic, things that cause cancer. And the World Health Organization had deemed it asthmatic trigger and skin irritant and an eye irritant. And I couldn't think, why in the world is Subway selling us this chemical and not anybody else overseas? And that really angered me. And so over the last year and a half or so, I've been reaching out to them, asking them about this chemical, and they just wouldn't even get back to me, honestly. They had no information. And even 10 days before I started the petition, I reached out to them. As soon as Michelle Obama made the announcement that she was endorsing this for healthy options for kids and saying it met the highest nutritional standard, I reached out to them one more time. I go, they've got to be changing their ingredients if they're really going to be endorsed by the Let's Move campaign. But nobody responded. And it wasn't until I really decided, hey, you know what, I'm going to organize this effort, and we're going to start a petition, and within 24 hours received 50,000 signatures, the fastest growing food petition I'd ever seen in my life. And I knew right then and there, just looking at Subway's Facebook page and hearing about all of the franchise owners being contacted and calling the headquarters. And within that 24-hour period, people went inside a Subway chain and asked the managers about this ingredient, this information. It spread that fast and that quickly because so many people felt duped. They thought they were eating fresh. They thought they were eating low calorie and healthy. And what they were really eating is a bunch of chemicals and a chemical that is banned all over the world.
You mentioned it being banned elsewhere, which of course it is. This seems to be a pattern. It seems to be fairly common for large food companies to formulate safer and better versions of their products for other countries. But in the U.S. version, in the formulations they sell here, they put a lot of artificial ingredients that would not be allowed or would have to be labeled elsewhere. I'm thinking, for example, about Kraft macaroni and cheese, and I know you've been involved with Kraft on this. The U.S. version of their Kraft mac and cheese has had artificial dyes, yellow number 5 and yellow number 6 in particular, which we know can cause hyperactivity in children. And when a U.S. box of Kraft macaroni and cheese was sold in the UK, it had to carry a warning label telling consumers that the product could cause adverse effects on activity and attention in children. So you decided to see if you can get them to change that here. And I know that in the first 36 hours after you created a petition asking Kraft to remove artificial food dyes from their mac and cheese products here in the U.S., your petition gathered more than 175,000 signatures. I think now it's up over 300,000. You've met with Kraft officials. Have they listened to you? Have they taken these petroleum-based artificial colors out of their macaroni and cheese products here in the United States?
You know, they started making the change late last fall, starting with the products that have cartoon characters on them and are geared towards children, which is a good first step. But what was really interesting about my meeting with them when I delivered, at the time it was 270,000 signatures to them in April of last year, I basically sat down with them and they told me they're not going to change, that their customers like the way their macaroni and cheese tastes, that these dyes affect the taste, which is not true, actually, because we taste tested the version that they sell in Europe without these dyes against the one here and it tastes virtually the same. And that they had no intention of doing anything about it. They were a total different beast than Subway and Chick-fil-A and even Chipotle and these other corporations that I've dealt with. They were hardcore not going to change. And they said, too bad, basically. And so what ended up happening was really bad for them. People started really waking up because this was a 7-month campaign before they started to change. And so every couple of weeks, I would start with a new post or something new to tell people about what's happening at Kraft. And slowly but surely, people started moving away from Kraft and started understanding the risks of these dyes. And they started to become aware of dyes and other foods that they started buying, you know, or had been buying for years and stopped buying those as well. But they started moving over to Kraft's competitor, Annie's. Annie's went up 14% that quarter, and there wasn't this big rise of new mac and cheese eaters. It was really a huge market shift. It wasn't just the petition signatures. It was people really putting their money where their mouth is and deciding, you know what, I'm not supporting Kraft anymore. I'm not buying this. I'm not feeding my kids this anymore. I'm going to go for the safer version of Annie's, or I'm going to learn to make it myself from scratch. And that's what I'm going to do. And so Kraft had no choice other than to change and adapt to the changing marketplace.
Bonnie, you know better than most that a lot of us are duped by the food industry into eating foods that undermine our health. What can a person do to make themselves less vulnerable to the marketing of unhealthy foods?
Well, I'd say anything on the front of a package is off limits. The most important side of the package is where the ingredient list label is. And if you can't understand the ingredients, if you don't know what you're eating, if you don't know what a chemical is, or even if you do know it because you've heard that it's bad, put that product back down and only choose real whole foods or products that are using ingredients that aren't based on numbers like yellow 5 and yellow number 6. If you see numbers on the back of the package and the ingredient list, there's a huge sign that you should probably put it down. If there's a long chemical name that you can't say or spell, usually an indication that you should put that package down. And you should really stick to the perimeter of the marketplace, stick to organic, non-GMO foods, and really you can live an amazingly healthful life doing that. And even taking it a step further and choosing an abundance of plant-based foods and making, you know, 80% of your diet plant-based, you can really dramatically change your health. And that's how I've been able to maintain my weight and feel great and have more energy now than I did 10 years ago, and how I've really transformed my life and the people around me, too, that have adopted this lifestyle and the different type of recipes that incorporate the healthiest foods on the planet, the things that come from the ground, that are made from Mother Nature, that aren't made in a factory. That's really the number one key, is to pay attention to the ingredients you're eating. I think down the road, the ingredients are going to be on the front because consumers are going to become so savvy and wanting to know what they're eating that food manufacturers are going to start to put that on the front of the label, because that's what people are going to be looking for, and that's what's going to be able to market them to be sold more profitably than other companies.
I'd love to see labels on not just food, but some of the beverages that we as a society consume. Currently, beer and wine and other alcoholic drinks do not have labels that say what's in them. And I think if we knew, a lot of us would want more organic products, and there would be a greater market for organic beer and wine and so forth. And also, I think there'd be less over-drinking, because some of what's in them would deter people.
There's a lot of people I know that don't drink soda. They don't drink Coca-Cola, Pepsi, all of these other drinks, because they're like, oh, high fructose corn syrup, caramel coloring, you know, this and that. But then they'll go pick up a beer, a Newcastle or something else, and little do they know, but a lot of those same ingredients are in the Newcastle too. Not knowing what we're drinking as far as alcohol, especially beer and wine, is one of the worst policies I could ever imagine even existing today. The total lack of transparency of what's in one of the most popular drinks in the world, really, beer, is a really big problem. And I think could unlock the answers to a lot of things we're facing as society. If people knew that they're drinking corn syrup and Miller Lite, propylene glycol, an ingredient that's used to make antifreeze, that they use to stabilize the phone. All of these different chemicals that are allowed in beer that people don't really understand or recognize, because they don't understand that the FDA doesn't even regulate it. It's actually the Treasury Department that does. It's a total backward system that needs to be fixed, and one that I hope to help fix one day.
Well, you're all about people knowing the truth and finding out the truth from food companies that often want to obscure the truth, and they have reasons for wanting to keep it opaque. You pointed out that a compound that's used in caulking and is the primary ingredient in silly putty is found in many processed foods. You've pointed out so many ways, and you keep doing this in a way that is influential to people. It's awakening the populace, and it's actually getting the attention and eliciting changes from the food companies. So I see your activism as a beautiful example, really, of how influential a person can be. You're educating people, which is wonderful, and you're also enticing major food companies to make changes in a healthier direction. You're literally changing the marketplace, Vani, and I want to thank you on behalf of myself, Ocean, all of our listeners, really everyone who eats and everyone who plans to eat for the rest of their lives owes you a debt of gratitude and appreciation.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And I just want to thank all of you, because honestly, I'm just one voice that is able to carry many others. And it's really our collective voices that really change the food system. And so without you, I would really not be able to do this. So thank you.
We've been talking with the food babe, Vani Hari, founder of foodbabe.com, and one of the most influential consumer educators and advocates of our times. Vani, Dr. Martin Luther King said we need tough minds and tender hearts. And your insightful, penetrating research combined with your love of humanity and your commitment to the public well-being is an inspiration. And we are so grateful for your bold work and so grateful to be your ally in the food revolution. It's been a privilege and a joy to share this time with you today.
Thank you so much.
This concludes our interview, but our work is just getting started. If you feel excited by what you just heard and want to share it with other people in your life, if you want permanent access to 23 more amazing presentations and transcripts, then we have an offer to share. You can get a download and a transcript of the entire Food Revolution Summit, plus a huge collection of bonus resources. If you like, you can also get CDs, members-only courses, and a lot more. This empowerment package is available for a major discount between now and the end of the summit. For more information, please visit foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Again, that's foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Thanks so much for joining us in the food revolution. Another celebrity who cares is the most successful recording artist in world musical history, Paul McCartney. From the days of his phenomenal success with the Beatles to his solo career of recent decades, Paul has always tried to use his celebrity status to make this world a better place. Paul's a leader of MeatFreeMondays.com, which is an initiative in which 18% of American households and many cities and school districts are now participating. Paul recorded a homemade song about Meat Free Monday, and he gave us permission to share it with you now. Now we have a pre-recorded message from one of the people whose life has been touched by the food revolution. This is Dr. Dawn Aragon of Seattle, Washington.
Hi, everybody. This is Dawn Irene Aragon, co-founder of PrimalTrust.com. I'm a licensed PhD clinical psychologist, certified yoga acroyoga teacher, and a mom. I'm here to share with you my food revolution incredible story. Throughout my teenage years, I struggled with depression off and on and significant struggles around my relationship with food. Despite that, mind over matter, I rocked out my PhD. I was an extreme athlete, triathlete, advanced yogi, endurance horseback racer, until I hit my 40s and had my son. After 2 years of sleepless nights, working full-time, going full bore, I hit a complete wall. I went to my primary care provider. She gave me a powerful benzodiazepine, sent me to every specialist under the sun with no one who could really help me. No relief whatsoever for any of my symptoms. After 5 years, I of studying, self-study, trying to figure out how to help myself, I ran across the Food Revolution Summit. I downloaded their information, and there was something really unique about what they had to offer. So I listened and studied avidly what those speakers had to say. I bought the empowerment package and started to really apply the principles that were really new. I had thought I knew everything about nutrition, but, you know, this summit really opened my eyes to a new way of self-healing. A year later, I am ecstatic to report I am depression-free for the first time since I can remember. I have transformed my relationship with food in ways that I never imagined possible. My most recent medical exam, my labs were within normal limits or better. I have more vitality, spark for life, joy, happiness, a new relationship that supports me in every way, nourishes me in every way. I encourage you to pay attention. Open your heart and mind. The food revolution has answers for every single person who's ready. Thank you all so much. Take care. Be well.
To express your opinions on what you've been hearing and to find out what other people are saying, you can post and engage in the comments section at the bottom of our broadcasts page. Our next presentation will be an interview with award-winning movie and TV star and healthy food activist, Woody Harrelson. We'll be hearing from Woody at the top of the hour. Until then, this is some music from our friend, Bruce Beckbar.